Hi, everybody, and welcome to Maintenance Phase, the podcast about goopy sex.
Yo,
I'm Aubrey Gordon.
I'm disgusted. I'm thinking about liquids. Look, I'm a very sex positive person, but also I don't want to hear details about other people's sex lives.
I think it's very funny to host a health and wellness podcast and have so much discomfort with so many bodily processes.
Yeah, I just don't. I'm not. I also can't watch like surgery footage or any kind of like medical.
Oh, that's reasonable. That's a horse of a different color, I would say. That lives in a different class.
I fully get like a stomach ache.
Can you do earwax videos?
Oh, God, no. Oh.
What about pimple popping videos?
Oh, I was just going to say, I cannot think about it. I cannot, like, I can't even, like, talk about it without getting, like, super squeamish.
I'm all in on all of it.
Really?
Pimple popping videos?
Oh,
yes.
Oh, my God.
Earwax videos? Yes.
Oh.
Get me in there.
I just don't want to think about what's on people's insides.
This must have been a tough one for you then.
Tissues. Anything with tissues.
So, Michael, for today's episode, you and I decided to dig in on The Other Goop Show on Netflix.
Yes.
Sex, Love, and Goop, which came out in 2021.
So, yes, we were supposed to record this on Tuesday, which is our normal recording time. But then we got on to record and we realized that both of us had like a terrible night of sleep the night before and we both felt like shit.
Yeah.
And so we decided not to record that day. So today is Thursday. And we didn't want to spoil each other, but we like talked a little bit about the show and like, oh, what did you think overall? And like, it got weird because like we both liked it.
Yeah, we were both like, I don't think this is bad? Question mark?
Yeah, we were both just like, I would not watch this like in my free time as a choice, but also it's basically a show about sex that follows couples working on their sexual issues and like openly discussing their sexual challenges and openly discussing how to like please each other more and make this a really successful part of their relationship. And ultimately, it's like, yeah, kind of good. And there isn't a lot of like, there's one episode that's like kind of weird pseudoscience-y stuff, but mostly it's just sort of fine.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so it was actually like kind of refreshing to be like, oh, it's a thing that we're not really going to dunk on. We can just like talk about this as a phenomenon and like as a pretty interesting documentary of like the kinds of challenges that couples have in this area.
So it really seems like public perception sort of bears out our response to this as well. I looked up Sex, Love, and Goop on Rotten Tomatoes. It had an 86%.
Oh, okay.
By contrast, Goop Lab had a 30% on Rotten Tomatoes,
right.
Which
right.
also makes me wonder, how did they get a second show if their first show got a 30%? I mean, like, Netflix very famously does not release its numbers on anything, so we have no way of knowing what the viewership of either of those were. There could have been plenty of hate watchers. That seems to be a big part of the Goop extended universe anyway. But it really surprised me that both in terms of sort of audience responses and in terms of critics' responses.
Yeah.
It seems fine, question mark, seems to be sort of the general vibe.
We're both kind of clenched waiting for something to get problematic and it just never comes.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, these all just kind of seem like nice people dealing with like real problems in a constructive way. Okay.
This is not a perfect media project, but going into a Gwyneth Paltrow Netflix show,
yeah,
I did not expect to be like, oh, and I was sort of like, oh, that's like not bad. Like I thought it was going to be bad.
Yeah. Not that we could tell anyway. Yeah.
And it doesn't appear to be a thing that like will like lead people to cause themselves physical harm.
If anything, this is just going to lead people to go and like get a therapist and like talk openly about like whatever sexual issues they're having, which like actually seems like a pretty good outcome on the relative scale of like Gwyneth Paltrow's effect on the world. Like this is one of the uncomplicated good ones, I feel like.
Totally. So the format of the show is that over the course of 6 episodes, you are following these couples who are sort of engaged in this work, both together as a group and mostly in dyads as couples with their sort of sex therapist person. And essentially a lot of the conversations boiled down to, what do you really want? What are you not asking for? Right. It ended up being a whole lot more about getting folks to express their actual desires and have more detailed conversations about, like, informed consent seemed to be quite a bit of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
There are 3 different sort of practitioners, 3 different, I think they describe themselves as sexologists. Is that right?
Yeah. One of them says she's a somatic sexologist. Mm-hmm. They're like sex therapists, basically.
So one of them, Jaya, was sort of the focus of that first episode. She's the person who they spend the most time with in the practitioners. She is the founder of something called Erotic Blueprints, which is essentially like a framework that it seems like she came up with for helping people understand, in the same way that we've got like love languages and the Myers-Briggs, or, you know, fucked up than that. Right. She's essentially like creating these sort of like archetypes or sort of base types for people to understand how they experience desire.
Yes. And we both took the quiz. Both of us independently were like, I need to know what kind of sexual type I am.
When we checked in about this episode, we were like talking about it. And one of the first questions from Mike was, did you take the quiz?
Yeah.
And I was like, yes, I took the quiz. What did you get?
But so I wrote down the 5 types that she has. So
I did too.
Okay, good. Go through them. Walk us through.
Okay, so there are 5 erotic blueprint types that Jaya defines. One is energetic. That's someone who she says is sort of turned on by like anticipation or sort of the lead up to the action, right? 2 is the sensual, and that is someone who's experiences desire through having, quote, all their senses ignited. So those are people who are very into touch and smell and taste and all of that kind of stuff.
I don't want to smell anything. I don't want.
You don't want to smell. Smell.
I'm fine with being 4 out of 5. You know.
She talks about the sexual as one of the types, which is basically just like people who are turned on by like watching porn and like having sex and seeing sexually explicit material, that kind of stuff.
Some people just like fucking.
Original recipe.
Yeah, because like a lot of the show is doing like, you know, strawberries and like tracing them down your skin. And then like, this is the type of person that's just like, sorry, can we fuck now? Yeah.
When does the fucking happen? I thought this was a sex show. That's the sexual. Type 4 is the kinky, which they describe as anyone who's turned on by the taboo. Which, yeah, I don't know that that's how I would describe kink. I also don't know that that's how people in the kink community would describe kink.
This is 2 queer people looking at this being like, oh, I don't know. This is like straight people, like super vanilla understanding of what kink is.
I mean, kink in the terms of this show, in the terms of the episode that I watched, there was one person who got like the kinky as their result for their erotic blueprint. And all the stuff that they tried out to be like kinky was like, put on a blindfold and then her skin. Or like try like pulling these like chains sort of like across the surface of her skin.
Right.
And there was one point where they were like, spank her. And it was like the lightest tap I have ever. It was like definitely a partner who had like never spanked someone before. I was like, oh, buddy.
Yeah, I am very happy for all of these people sexually exploring and discovering what they do and do not like. I was like, this is great. Not sure that it's kink necessarily, but like if you want to call it that, like honestly, have a blast. These people all seem really nice.
So type 4 is the kinky and type 5 is the shapeshifter, which is just like all of it.
I think that all of these types seem like totally made up to me. And also like most of these frameworks, like Myers-Briggs and everything else, it's like they're fundamentally a little bit arbitrary, and everyone is a little bit of all of them.
Yeah.
And then throwing in the shapeshifter feels like a huge cop out to me. It's like, you're just into everything. But also, I think even though these are fundamentally pretty arbitrary. It also is just like a framework for talking about this stuff. Like, what kind of person am I sexually? What kind of person is my partner sexually? And that honestly seems like a fairly constructive exercise.
This fits in the same kind of category for me as the love languages stuff.
Yeah.
Which is just like, this is a tool for articulating what you want.
Yeah.
And making it okay to say what you want. And it feels arguably more helpful here because this is such an area, particularly in the US, I would say, where people experience just a colossal amount of shame.
Yeah.
Around sex and sexual desire in a way that plays out differently in different countries and cultures and contexts and all kinds of stuff. Mm-hmm. But like here, I would say discussion of sex is deeply weird and conflicted in a way that honestly feels like there are some shared threads with how we talk about how you should feel about your body right now.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? That's just like, love it, but also change it, but also be ashamed of it, but also don't let anybody see it. But also it's yours and it's the only one you got, so you better take care of
it.
Like, I think there's a lot of that like directly contradictory messaging around sex and sexual desire as well.
And also, I don't know if you notice this as like a queer person, but I am so fascinated by straight sexual dating mores because I've never experienced this, right? I've never been on a dating app where I'm looking for women. I've never gone on a date with a woman. I've never had sex with a woman. So all of this stuff is like, to me, in my world of like gay men, it's like I have the same anatomy as the people that I'm having sex with generally. And in gay male world, people are super open.
Totally.
We're in my community, it's like we just put everything out there. And it doesn't mean that we don't have body stuff. It doesn't mean that we don't have complications. We do. But it's like what's so interesting to me about this show and all the couples that they profile is how much like weird gender stuff comes into this. Because like women are not supposed to say like, I want you to fuck me in this way. Because then it's like, it's all wrapped up with this, like, am I a slut? Is he going to think that I'm a slut? You know, like women on dating apps, even if they want to do hookups, they're not conditioned to be able to say, I'm just looking for hookups. Cause then the dudes are like, oh, she's a slut. I don't want to see her. It's like, there's this weird extra layer of like societal gender bullshit on top of everything for straight people. And I'm just constantly like, wow, this seems hard.
It's like a running fucking joke between me and a number of my queer lady friends, which is just like, oh, everybody's a fucking bottom?
Right.
Great.
Right.
How is this possible?
Right. Yeah,
you
have
those conversations relatively early on, because if this is a person with whom you are fundamentally sexually incompatible,
then
or
no
like
point.
Not interested in the kind of sex that they're interested in or playing the role that they want you to play, like that's a really important conversation to have. This is like a long-standing thing that I have with like straight friends. It is fascinating and heartbreaking to me how little conversation many of my straight friends have with their partners about the kind of sex that they want to have.
It's so interesting to me too.
It feels like another planet from where I live.
Some of these couples on this show have been in their relationships for like years and are like, oh, he's never given me an orgasm.
Yeah.
I mean, no blame on these people. I understand why they don't bring it up, but it's just so fascinating to me that you just kind of go on in this like status quo, which like as a gay guy, I'm just like, what?
Well, I think part of what makes that possible is having so little conversation about it, just sort of like culturally, right? There are like not a ton of spaces for straight ladies to have like frank conversations about the kind of sex that they're having. And for some folks to go, wait a minute, you're having like great fucking sex and you said you were into this thing and your partner went along with you on that. What?
This
felt genuinely helpful on that front. As I was watching it, I was like, God, for every one of the like dozen people on this show, there are thousands of people who are not having this conversation in their relationship. It felt to me in some ways like a really holistic conversation about consent,
right?
Which is, it's not just what are you not into, what are you not okay with, stop doing that thing. It's also like, I would love it if you did this fucking thing. It really did feel sort of like a crash course in what happens every day on like Scruff and Jacked. Oh, this is like every DM on every like queer hookup app.
My episode that I watched started with Gwyneth saying, there's no models for a mature adult conversation about sexual pleasure, yeah, like within a relationship.
Yeah.
I was like, damn, Gwyneth, that's wise. Like that's the truest thing I've ever heard Gwyneth say. Mm. And I like one of my main beefs with just like sort of pop culture in general is that there's very few models of mature conflict resolution. Like what does it look like to have a disagreement with someone and just come to an agreement about it like adults where you don't end up hating each other at the end of it? Yeah. Like that doesn't make for good drama, right? So it doesn't really appear in fictional descriptions, and it definitely isn't in like reality shows where everybody just has like the most immature conflict resolution style imaginable, because that's how you get good TV. So there's very few models. And then with sex, where there's this extra layer of taboo on it.
Yeah.
It's so rare to see anybody just be like, I didn't come.
Yeah.
And I'd really like it if I came at the end of that. And like, you haven't made me come yet. And not in a way that makes the other person feel belittled, right? There's, there's all this gender stuff about it. Like, oh, you think I'm not performing? And like, not necessarily, just you don't know what I like. And I'd like to have a conversation where I tell you what I like. And you don't necessarily see that as an attack. It's more like we're collaborating on like, how can we both work together for us both to have like the best sexual experience possible?
I also think we're talking quite a bit about socialization and all of that kind of stuff, and sort of like where women and particularly straight women learn to not talk about sex. And I think part of that stuff, part of like being like, I didn't actually come, can we like make this happen? Part of that is straight up, there are dudes who fucking snap.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah.
If you have fucking feedback about how they have sex, or if you say that wasn't great for me or whatever. So some of it is also like very concretely self-protective behavior, depending on who your partner is, depending on, is it someone you know well and trust a lot or not?
And even on like one night stands and stuff, I feel like some dudes genuinely perceive it as a threat when a woman is like, I need you to do this to me.
Yeah.
You know, it's all of a sudden it like triggers all this weird stuff of like, I'm not performing enough, or like, oh, she's a slut, she's done this before. And there's this weird performance of you're the first time and you're the best, whatever, that men genuinely expect. So a lot of this weird gender stuff that women sort of have to perform, part of that is like a safety thing. And part of that is honestly like to get the kind of sex you want, you sort of have to coddle his ego sometimes.
Yeah.
Again, I'm not speaking from any experience here, but like it does seem like there's all this kind of this complicated dance that has to go on.
Yeah.
Which just seems really difficult.
It totally does. I mean, I think, look, I actually think the first couple in the episode that I watched is like a really good example of this. The first couple in the first episode that they talk about are Erica and Damon.
Yeah, they're like the main couple in the show. They're in, I think, every episode.
They're really interesting.
Yeah.
They seem like a good sort of audience surrogate. I was I bet this is kind of a thing in a lot of relationships, and particularly a lot of straight ones. They open up by saying their sort of practitioner says that these two are a sexual mismatch. Jaya says they're just like, they're just not matched up. So they got to figure out how to bridge the gaps. Erica is very high in her kink score. Again, kink question mark, but okay. Right. And Damon is very low on his kink score. Mm-hmm. So they essentially try like very light kink play together. They have Erica put on a blindfold. Jaya, their practitioner, brings out this sort of like box full of stuff to try out different sensations. She's got these sort of liquid chains that he was supposed to sort of drip onto Erica's body and let her feel the, you know, movement of the chains. They had a furry sort of mitt that he could use. There was a paddle. There were these things that they called Wolverine claws.
Yeah,
they were
fully
like giant. They look like knives strapped to your knuckles. But also like, I was like, I bet that just feels like a serious back scratcher. Like really nice. Yeah. You know what I mean? I bet that feels good.
I know. I want that on my head.
They try it and Damon is like kind of into it. He was like, he starts out feeling like really uncomfortable with it. And then he's like, oh, okay. I can like get into this. His narrative all along about Erica is that she's very sexually conservative and he's not. And essentially what they find out through this process is she's not sexually conservative. That's not what's happening there. He just wasn't asking her what she wanted, was my takeaway. Right. And she wasn't saying, I want this. So yeah, he yeah, just yeah. thought she wasn't that into sex. And it turned out they just weren't having a kind of sex that she was into. So she was definitely like having a lukewarm response. She says at one point that she's only had 2 orgasms from penetrative sex. And it sounds like that's the main kind of sex that they're having.
Yeah.
Which is not uncommon for people with clitorises, you know, to be like, this version is not doing it for me. Right? Yeah.
There's a very funny scene where he's describing their sex life. Like it's the two of them sort of speaking directly to the camera. And he's talking about how like he's given her pleasure and he thinks they have this like great sex life together. And it zooms in on her face yes. as he's talking. And she's like, I don't know, man. And so this was the couple I was talking about where it seems like he's basically never given her an orgasm or very seldom. But then like she has also, it seems like kind of internalized this thing of like, well, oh, I'm just kind of not into sex, basically.
Well, this is also the role that women play in the conversations that we do have about sex, right?
Yeah.
We talk about faking orgasms. We talk about not being that into it. We talk about fucking lie back and think of England, mm-hmm. right? Like we talk about sort of all of these ways that women tolerate sex mm-hmm. and we don't actually talk about like, what would it look like to enjoy it though?
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
Their second sort of exercise that they do, they call pretty poses. And Erica lays on, they've got essentially this sort of like massage table platform kind of thing. She lays on that. She is also wearing a blindfold and they have Damon direct her on how to move her body, where to put her hands, where to like touch her skin, where to whatever. And it's essentially like having her pose in poses that he finds hot, right? Is sort of the general idea.
Yeah.
They seem to be like really into it. And at the end of it, Damon says, I learned that she's not as sexually conservative as I thought she was. And I was like, yeah, dude, it turns out if you talk to each other about what you actually want, you will have better sex.
I know.
Damon is responding to this like it is the wildest shit he has ever seen. He's like, whoa, like
really, it is, I know.
It was like really charming to me. I was like, oh, honey.
He's like a little kid. Sometimes this is a man like he appears to be like in his 40s. He has like a salt and pepper like gray goatee, and like sometimes his face looks like a 6-year-old like opening presents on Christmas morning. He's just like, wow, yeah, this is the best.
God damn it. I have such fondness for you like having this moment. I was like, oh, your mind is getting blown right now.
It seems like, okay, so I did not watch episode 1, which is what you watched, which seems like it's a sort of like best of.
Oh, really?
The things that they go through. Yeah, because one of my episodes in episode 6, the final episode of the show, is like a longer version of them doing that exercise where he like puts her in poses. Mm. So it seems like they're kind of giving you like a lot of the arc in the first episode. But did you get footage of the thing where he lies down and she gives him like an erotic massage?
I got that showed up in the trailer.
Okay. Okay.
There's like a little shot of that in a trailer. And the other one is the energetic orgasm.
Yes.
I don't totally understand the energetic orgasm stuff, but I also didn't watch it.
It's very Gwyneth in that it's a mixture of like super reasonable stuff and just like woo woo fucking nonsense. So there's this thing where Damon lies down face up on a massage table. I'm assuming in real life, if it wasn't on TV, you'd be naked.
Yeah.
But in the show, he's in his boxers. I also thought that the aesthetics of the whole show were so funny that for all the therapy sessions, they're in what appears to be some sort of like glass cube, like out in nature. And like they're drinking out of water bottles, but the water bottles are half like birch, like light wood with like a half water bottle. I'm just like, okay, it's like Ex Machina, like the house in the middle of fucking Iceland, like the entire time.
It's totally Ex Machina. I was going to say it's the world's most expensive treehouse.
Yeah. Is where
the whole thing is like, really,
I feel like in real life, you'd probably be in like a strip mall.
That's right.
So anyway, so he lies down on the table face up and the therapist Jaya is walking Erica through basically like figuring out the kinds of things that he likes. So the whole purpose of this process is to figure out like what kind of sexual person is Damon? Is he like the sensual type? Is he like the anticipation type or whatever? So they do this thing with like, yes, like little you know, pillows or like whips and like, I mean, not really whips, but like, you know, they're kind of rubbing him, but like lightly, sort of like where his body hair can feel it, but his like body can't feel it. They're doing a sort of like breathing thing. They're supposed to match their breathing. At one point, he gets goosebumps due to all of this like body hair sort of almost touching him kind of thing. And then the therapist says, every cell of your body is getting an erection. I was like, all right, ultimately it's a goop show. Like, you know, fine.
Oh, yeah.
They also do this thing, which I think is also very typical in like woo-woo places where she, you know, they spend what appears to be like, I don't know, 45 minutes or an hour or something, just sort of feeling around his body and sort of feeling through like what he does and doesn't like. And then at the end, he's like, that's amazing. And it's like this really nice moment, actually, where he like holds Erica and he's like, I love you so much, baby. And she's like, I love you too.
Oh.
And Jaya says, like, you've just had an energetic orgasm. No. I mean, it's like you had a nice time with your partner, but like Jaya goes into this whole weird monologue about how like we're orgasmic beings and how like we've been robbed of our orgasmic selves. And she has this whole like weird worldview. And it's the part of like, you know, the you go to an appointment with like an acupuncturist or something and you're just kind of like, oh, okay, I just need to get through this weird monologue to get to like the part of the therapy that I like. It's like, it's not an orgasm in any meaningful sense. Like you can redefine like any type of bodily pleasure as an orgasm if you really want to, right? I don't feel all that strongly about it, but it's like, that's clearly what she's done.
Or like the energetic equivalent of a orgasm, or sure. You know what I mean? Like there's like ways of saying that. Yeah. I will say I looked into Jaya a little bit and the only thing that really came up was this Daily Mail piece from 2011. Mm-hmm. The headline is, quote, I've got two men who love me. Woman has baby with the lover her boyfriend encouraged her to take, parentheses, and they were both there at the birth.
Oh, it's just like poly people exist?
It's just like, there's poly people. One time, like a group of poly people had a baby.
Yeah.
Also, it's not like a famous person. It's just like, hey, check out this lady. She's got two dudes.
But then this gets to like by far the weirdest and most woo-woo scene of the entire show, where Jaya is walking them through this like energetic orgasm thing. And then she lies down face up, fully clothed on the massage table. And her partner, boyfriend, whatever he is, comes in. And then he demonstrates how to give somebody like an energetic orgasm, which is this like, I'm sorry, but just like super fake thing where she lies there with a blindfold on and he like moves his hands over her and like in the space like above her crotch. He's like doing like finger stuff.
Like in the air?
Yeah, in the air. At no point is he touching her.
Okay.
And then she starts being like, oh, oh, oh. I guess the idea is that you're supposed to be like, oh my God, she has a blindfold on. She doesn't know where his hands are, but like she's having an orgasm through the air, through the power of his energy or something. And it just seems like Ouija board nonsense to me.
If Reiki doesn't pass the sniff test for you, this is also not gonna pass the sniff test.
Yeah, it's
for
basically
you.
Like Reiki, but like third base. Mm. You know, you just go for it with the Reiki stuff.
Reiki, but third base really got me.
And you can't really tell, like, I don't know how much editing was involved in Damon and Erica's reactions as they're watching this, but I feel like I detected a little bit of like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
Whatever, like, let's just get through this and back to the part where like my wife touches my nipples, which I really like.
Totally. There is, I will say, in the first episode, there's a great moment when they're unpacking the box of stuff to play with. And one of the things is nipple clamps. And Damon goes, and holds his nipples.
Amazing.
And Erica goes, his nipples are very sensitive. And he goes, very sensitive. I was like, this is fair. Like, it just was like, it was like when a cartoon character realizes they're naked and like goes,
yeah,
like covers themselves up with their hands. Like, that was the physical response that Damon was having. And I was like, this is, how are you so charming all the time, Damon?
I know. Did you get to the scene about the clitoris stuff? stuff?
I did not get the scene about the clitoris stuff. No.
So one of the best and like most helpful and interesting scenes in this whole show was later in the therapy, after they do this energetic orgasm stuff, they then talk about Erica's inability to orgasm. And so Jaya sits them down with a stuffed animal representation of the vagina and just like walks them through how vaginas work. And it has like moving parts and shit. And she talks about like the, you know, the labia, and then she gets to like this clitoris part. She's like, some people have innies and some people have outies. Some people like just like a little bit of pressure on it. Some people need like a ton of pressure on it. But like, this is the area that you really need to focus on. And then she lies Erica down with sort of in some sort of apparatus with like stirrups. So at first Erica's talking about how I feel like I'm about to get a pap smear. Like It feels like this like medical thing. And Jaya's like, yeah, people have this like tension around their body, right? Which can really inhibit sexual pleasure, right? You never feel like you're really letting go. You're kind of like, oh, what's about to happen, right? You don't totally trust your partner. And So this therapist, Jaya, like actually goes into Erica's vagina and like tries different ways of manipulating her clitoris. She's like, okay, Now I'm pressing down on it. Like now I'm sort of rubbing it back and forth. Now I'm rubbing on it up and down. And Erica eventually kind of relaxes and sort of like, it seems like for the first time, like starts to really feel sexual pleasure. And of course, Damon is there too.
He seems to be sort of engaged in the learning part of it.
Yeah. And it seems like, I mean, I can see a dude having like a really bad response to this where it's basically a therapist like giving your wife an orgasm.
Yeah.
But because Damon feels like he's participating in this process, I think he's holding Erica's hand at one point. It's just like, okay, we're going to figure out what she needs. And finally, it does appear that Erica like has an orgasm. She's like crying.
Yeah.
And also like her husband is there and being like super constructive. And I think the whole experience feels like just really good to both of them. Like, oh my God, we're like figuring this out.
Mm.
This also gets us to like the weird legal stuff around this kind of therapy. So we talked about this briefly on Tuesday, but both of us, I think we watched the show and then we like Googled around. We were like, goop, sex, pseudoscience or whatever. And one of the first things that comes up is that this show is like promoting a form of therapy that is illegal in 49 states.
Yeah. Essentially, like Mike and I had two different responses. I was like, oh shit, there's got to be like either a scandal that led to this level of bans or like some kind of like right wing push to get these bans put in place was sort of my assumption. And you were like, no, it's just people are just thinking of this as sex work and they're trying to ban sex work.
Yes.
And this is part of that. And I was like, oh, that makes sense.
So as I looked into this more, the question isn't why is this illegal in 49 states? The question is why is this legal in California? Because this form of therapy, like what Jaya did to Erica, is straightforwardly sex work.
Yeah.
This is like a recognized form of therapy. There's a certification scheme. There's like professional bodies. There's a code of ethics. Like there's all kinds of information about this kind of therapy, but it is illegal because you are paying someone to perform sexual acts on you. It doesn't matter in America the purpose of those sexual acts. It doesn't matter if that person is licensed. It doesn't matter the context. All that matters is you are paying someone to do a sex act. So the reason it's not illegal in California is because it was basically founded there. It was this guy named Joseph Kramer who was like studying to be a Jesuit priest, but then he realized he was gay and he left the priesthood, and then he moved to the Bay Area in the 1980s at like the height of the AIDS crisis. And there were all these gay and bi men who were like super traumatized and like super in their heads about sex because of like the context of sex with men had changed so quickly. And people just felt all kinds of weird shame and fear and grief around sex at the time. And so he started teaching these classes for people to like explore their sexuality and like kind of come to grips with the sexual trauma that they had experienced. And eventually this basically grew into like a form of sex therapy, of like a way of kind of training people to have orgasms, or like, you know, training people in the ways that you would discover the kinds of orgasms that you want. So I believe California like officially legalized this, which is why it's legal in California, but nowhere else. And if you go on the website of the Association of Certified Sexological Body Workers, they list the reasons why people seek out this therapy, which I think is like actually really instructive. So it says, developing sexual confidence, understanding anal pleasure, unwinding shame, consent and boundaries, inability to orgasm, recovering from relational or sexual trauma, learning to give and receive pleasure, premature ejaculation or erectile dysfunction, or recovering sexual function after childbirth or surgery. This appears to be like a form of therapy where you basically hire a professional to help you figure out what you do and don't like, either as an individual or as part of a couple or however you want to do it. And it does seem like, I mean, obviously there's some like illegitimate, immoral practitioners of this, and there have been like various scandals over the years. But also, like, that's true of, like, dentistry. Like, that's true of auto mechanics. You know, like, that. This seems to be, like, a fairly, like, useful and normal form of therapeutic practice for some people in some circumstances, which is kind of the way that it is with all forms of therapy.
It seems like it's an extension of our, like, complete and total moral panic meltdown around sex work. That's just like, anything that's even adjacent, get it the fuck out of here.
Yeah, because in countries, I mean, most of the professional bodies are in Europe, where they have a much more, like, they have their own problems, but they have a much closer to defensible position on sex work. So this kind of therapy is legal in a lot of European countries. And, like, yeah, the only reason why it's not available in America appears to be our weird puritanism about this. Yeah. God, I can't believe we're actually like defending Goop right now. We're like, let Gwyneth live.
I feel like we've really slipped through a wormhole or something. We're in Interstellar. We're Matthew McConaughey floating through 1,000 of his daughter's bedrooms.
We're like, Western medicine doesn't want you to know. Oh, like, God. This is the beginning of our transformation.
So should we talk about Felicitas and Rama?
Yes, this is the other couple. Dude, Rama and Felicitas felt doomed to me. Was this your impression too?
Well, so here's what they reveal in the first episode, and I don't know if you would have gotten this later on, but I was like, holy shit. Part of their intro is that Felicitas was like, I told Rama I wanted a divorce.
Yeah.
And Rama was like, but we're deciding to stick it out and figure it out. And I was like, oh, this is a very specific place to be and seems wild.
Every scene with them, I was like, these people are not going to make it. They both seem nice, but like, they just seem like a huge mismatch to me.
There is one point at which their sexologist, Michaela Bohm is her name, does sort of this exercise with them where she says, I want you to get into your worst mood.
Okay.
And just like interact with each other from that space, like inhabit that in your body, blah, 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 blah. And then she just watches their body language as they interact.
Okay.
And they cut to her explaining to camera. She's like, I ask them to tell me what's wrong. And then I ask them to do this because whatever they think is wrong is usually not what's really wrong.
Okay.
So she's like, oh, Rama's coming to you for help with this thing, and you're reading that as he's like another kid that I have to take care of, and you don't want to take care of him, which causes him to retreat because he was trying to get a need met and you weren't there to meet it, right? Like,
right.
These are two people who are not communicating.
Yes.
So at one point, Michaela has Felicitas and Rama sit on the ground sort of facing each other and just like have a conversation and asks each of them to tell the other, like, what's their greatest gift in how they show up in your relationship, right? Like, she's trying to get them grounded in some appreciation for each other.
Yeah.
And Felicitas thinks about it and offers this answer that seems very genuine to me. And she's like, honestly, it's his commitment to me and to our relationship and to our family. Like, he's very committed. And then they go to Rama to answer, and he really struggles with the question, like visibly struggles with like, what's a good way that she shows up in our relationship. He ends up saying like, she has a really strong sense of right and wrong. And he says something like, she puts a lot of energy into the family's wellness and diet and lifestyle.
Oh, that's like, she's punctual. That's
what's
like,
this?
Yeah.
Then Michaela turns to Felicitas and goes, how do you feel about what he just said? And she's like, but it doesn't feel like it says anything about me.
Yeah, that sucks. Yeah.
The last thing that they did, which I thought was very funny, is Michaela asks both of them to come up with nicknames for the other one to use during sex. Like, what's another name that you might call your partner to like refer to their sort of like sexual persona or to engage them in that way?
Aardvark. Hedgehog. Someone who retreats.
Rama goes, well, actually, most of the time I call Felicitas Feli.
Okay.
And he was like, but when I'm really appreciating her, I call her Felicitas. So I think it would just be Felicitas. And she was like, okay. And then Felicitas is like, yeah, I mean, Rama is a shortened version of his middle name. And he gives this whole explanation about what his middle name means and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And she's like, so I think my nickname for him would just be like Rama. And I was like, okay, so Felicitas and Rama's nicknames for each other is Felicitas and Rama.
Guys.
I was like, tell me you don't want to be here without telling me you don't want to be here. Like, rejecting the premise entirely. It seemed to me in that first episode that he felt a sense of obligation to make their family work and their relationship work, and that she felt like she owed it to him to give it a try.
Yeah.
It didn't feel like there was a great deal of like deep internal buy-in from either of them. It seems like they were like, we could do this. And they were like, okay. And then both of them seemed to be, you know, just not all the way in. Not phoning it in by any stretch, but like definitely not all in.
They only show up in one other episode of the show.
Yeah.
There's no big breakthrough. It's not like Damon and Erica where like both of them are crying on camera at one point talking about like how meaningful this process has been. The one that I watched, this was episode 2, was about them sort of exploring sexually that Felicitas wants Rama to like be a dominant dude. Like she wants him to take control and like throw her around a little bit and do this like masculine stereotypical stuff. Like she finds it really hot.
I mean, listen, that might be part of his sexual persona. I don't know, like sort of how he shows up in bed, but like in terms of how he shows up in the world, that is not the kind of dude that Rama seems to
be. No, exactly. So the whole problem is she says the actual dynamic that they have is he's this like this little boy who's like trying to please her all the time. Mm-hmm. And he's just like too nice and he's too compliant. And she, you know, she has to tell him to do everything. And he never like takes charge. Mm-hmm. And so it's really hard to turn someone on like that when like you're constantly having to tell somebody what you want. You're like, now do this, now do this, now do this. It's like, I don't want to hold your hand.
Yeah.
So there's a couple little exercises where they try to get him into the therapist calls it like King Rama mode, where he like takes control. And they're all like really unconvincing. So they do like a blindfold thing where he's supposed to like put her hands where he wants them to be. And he like leads them dancing at one point, and it's supposed to be like him taking the lead on like which moves we want to do. And like, but what's really interesting is she can't give up control. Like she wants him to be dominant, but whenever he like asks her to do something, she's kind of like, I don't know if I really want to do that.
Mm.
She can't like let herself get what she wants, basically. Mm. She's stuck in this like loop where it's like she wants him to be different, but the minute he is different,
she's like,
Yeah, she's like, oh, I don't know that I really want this. So he doesn't really have a clear sense, because what she's telling him is not what she actually wants. And I also think that like they've now established this pattern where he is the submissive partner, and they've both kind of fallen into those roles so much. Mm. Even when he is the dominant partner, it's sort of like, sweetie, how do you want me to be dominant? And like that kind of ruins the whole thing. So like neither one of them can ever really do it. And so there's this really telling moment where after, you know, he puts on the blindfold and he's kind of trying to take control of like the kind of sex they want to have, whatever. He says, oh, that felt great. And he kind of goes in to kiss her. And she's like, if you knew it was good, why didn't you do that all along?
Ew.
And it's like, oh, you're just like,
why?
You're just sort of killing, you're killing the vibe. Like he finally starts to unlock what she wants. And then she immediately goes back to like, well, why aren't you doing this anyway?
Yeah.
And it's just like, okay, well now we're basically back at square one. So this was me watching this being like, I don't know if these guys are going to make it. Like there might just be too much like history there for either one of them to like really reset the roles that they play in the relationship at this point. And there's other like exercises they do where he like has her crawl around on the ground and he's like, now crawl toward me, like trying to do this dominant thing.
Yeah.
At least to me, it felt really palpable that like neither one of them were really into it. Maybe they were just doing it for the cameras.
Yeah, that dude does not have dom energy. Like he just really does not.
He seems like a really nice guy, but it just doesn't seem like, it doesn't seem like sexually that's like what she wants particularly.
It makes me so sad to think about having a relationship for this many years. I mean, they talk about meeting in college And they also talk about having an 11-year-old, right? So we're talking about minimum 15 years, right?
Yeah, they look sort of late 30s, early 40s to me.
Yeah, and I just was like, this is heartbreaking to me.
Yeah, yeah, same, yeah.
That
yeah.
both of you have had this relationship for this long where you feel this irritated with each other or shut out by each other, but also yeah, that yeah, you're yeah. not having sex that either of you seem to want to have.
Yeah.
And like... neither one of you seems happy about this. My overwhelming feeling about the two of them just after the first episode was like, you know, it might have been worth listening to Felicitas when she said, I'm ready to leave, you know, because once you get to the point of asking for a divorce, not considering it, not mulling it over, not a separation, but you're fully like, I want a divorce. Like, that can be a tough one to come back from if you get to a place of internal resolution on that. It's like quitting your job and then being like, never mind, I unquit, right? Like,
right.
There's like a level of psychological disengagement that you're doing, right? And when you do that, all the things that irritate you about that job or that partner or that whatever start to show up in really high contrast, really sharp relief, right?
Yeah.
And it just seemed like... they got to the point of doneness and they are now past the point of doneness.
There's a little epilogue to the show where it shows Damon and Erica are pregnant, which is like, yay. And then there's like a super brief clip of Rama and Felicitas just like, hi. But it like doesn't give any information.
We're here too.
Yeah, we also continue to exist. I think, I mean, this is probably part of like the fundamental dishonesty of the show is that a lot of therapy journeys with couples just like don't go anywhere, right? And you realize that like, oh, these people are just fundamentally mismatched or there's enough bad blood between these two people that like, I don't know if it can really be repaired.
Yeah.
And it's probably best for everybody. That's another one of those stories that you probably don't see depicted all that much. Yeah. Not necessarily people getting the magic spark back.
Yeah.
That's probably why they didn't get as much screen time. And also, I would actually love to see like a probably more honest show like this that follows couples trying to make it work or like exploring sexually, but doing it in a kind of a more like randomized sample kind of way, right? You take like 10 couples and probably some of them are going to be like Damon and Erica, but I feel like that's probably the minority of them. And a lot of couples are just like, sorry, this just really isn't working out. And like, that's also fine, right? That's also valid for both these people to just move on.
We don't have a lot of great cultural templates for healthy breakups.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
For people just going, oh, I don't actually think this is working.
And you don't have to burn it down. You don't have to end up hating each other.
Yeah. I know friends who have been through those kinds of breakups and who have managed it really beautifully. And I wish that we had more of a template for understanding that and for people to sort of like go with on that front.
Yeah.
I definitely wished for that. I also was like, God damn it. This kind of show developed by fat people for fat people would be fucking incredible. I was thinking a similar thing about like a version of this by trans people for trans people could be incredible, right? Like a gay men's version of this show would look very different.
Another thing that I noticed is like all of the people on this show, I feel like they're fairly good with like racial diversity and there's like a bunch of same-sex couples, but every single person appears to be like college educated, upper middle class, like professional class worker.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, it's goop, right? It's like, I don't have a lot of trust.
I don't need it to be Gwyneth Paltrow's show. I don't need it to be this particular approach. But like, fucking thumbs up to people talking more honestly and candidly about sex and the kind of sex they want to have or don't want to have. I like it. Thumbs up to that conceptually.
Yeah, we just need to send everyone in America a stuffed version of a vagina.
A Beanie Baby vulva?
Yeah. Yes.
Oh, no. I think that might have to be the end. I don't know.